Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are again on today is September 4th. And plenty to discuss. We just wrapped up a convention, and now there's another one.
Yeah, and I'm back on the same day as you are. Last time it was Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. You were ahead a day.
Yeah, so then I lost a day, and I'm still trying to get back the hourly time differential. It's kind of hard when it's 12 hours.
Plus a day.
Yeah. But anyway, lots going on. We could talk about the DNC that's happening right now. We'll talk about that in a minute. I know you sent me an email this morning saying, I just can't take it anymore. All this stuff coming out about this and that. So I got some statistics for you and some bullet points on how the economy is doing over the last three or so years.
Well, this is in response to my query about whether or not the Democrats have brought this up, not the Republicans. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And if you watch any of these shows, these crummy shows that are on the TV, you know, from Fox or from MSNBC, CNN, I'd categorize them, they're too crummy. And so they're all in there making their points. And I think that they're having a hard time making the point that you're better off. I sure don't see it with the unemployment numbers.
You want to talk about that now, all of this?
Yeah.
All right, so let's
get it out of the way. A bunch of politics is in the news this week. We might as well get this out of the way.
So the idea is, just to kind of restate this, that the Democrats are saying, hey, you know, look how much better off you are since President Obama has been in office, right? That's the thesis.
Yeah, that's the thesis.
Okay, and the economy is better, people are better off and all that. And obviously the Republicans are taking a different tack, saying that look what's going on here, everything is in the shambles.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So I went back and I looked at when President Obama came into office. I backtracked it a couple of days just to give us a round number of January 1st, 2009. That's fair, right? That's the time period?
Sounds right.
Okay. And obviously the people that are hardcore Democrats are going to say, wait a minute. He inherited all this problem. And then again, you're going to hear people on the other side saying, well, yeah, but he said he was going to solve a lot of these things and things are better. So let's kind of look at these numbers. Back then, on January 1st, 2009, full-time employed people, there were 117 million. Today, there are 114 million. So we're down 3 million jobs.
Right. And we've had an uptick in number of people as citizens
right.
Because of birth rate.
We have the U6 number, which is the total part-time and all the discouraged workers, and the whole big number was 14% then and 15% now. All right, so unemployment or employment numbers are not showing that we're better off as a country. Now, individually, some people may have a job, and they may be doing a little bit better. But as a whole, I think those two things say that we're not better off, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, no, this is you get some good numbers here.
Okay, real wages, I did some backtracking and looked at real wages, are up 0%, meaning that the wage overall on an inflation-adjusted basis are not changed. So you're not making any more money if you have that job.
Right.
Okay. The national debt, the total amount of debt outstanding was $10 trillion, and now it's $16 trillion, and just cracked the $16 trillion mark today on the upside. The average price of gas, you know what the average price of gas was back on January 1st, 2009?
Well, you have the right number, but I was guessing $2.50.
Yeah, it was $1.88, and now it's $4. The average price of gas overall. The S&P was obviously it has moved. It was $9.50, and now it's $1,400. So there you go. That's obviously a much better situation. So if you calculate and you say that we're a lot better off because of the fact that the S&P is higher and the wealth effect drove everything higher, well, then I would say that's a check mark for, yes, we're better off today. The total GDP, the gross domestic product, back then was $12,846,000. Now it's $13.5 trillion. So that's better. The overall amount of gross national product, gross domestic product is better. But a lot of that came from government spending and a few other things. Government spending spending was $2.9 million. Now it's a little over $3 trillion.
2.9 to 3. Yep. Yeah.
The federal Fed balance sheet was about 10 times the amount where the Fed has bought back all sorts of securities. It went from about $200 billion to $2 trillion. Income for black households fell 11.5% during his presidency versus a 5.2% drop for white households. Hmm. That's on a non-inflation adjusted basis. So I don't know. I think those are some pretty important numbers. I mean, housing prices have stabilized. They're down since that date, but have stabilized. Real estate in some areas has obviously picked up. But, I mean, overall, and corporate profits have picked up. I'll give you that, too. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that enormous amounts of money were pumped into the economy through whether it's, you know, the Fed or other stimulus measures.
So well, all I can say is if anyone's better off, it would be a banker.
Bankers are better off. Not all of them, not layman bankers, but yes, most of them are better off.
Bankers are doing very well. And to top it off, when Obama gives his speech, it's going to be at the Bank of America Stadium.
But, you know, when you look at this and you look at the totality of the things that have happened, I can't see how the average American is better off. I can see how corporations are better off. I can see how corporate America is much better off. I can see how the stock market investors are better off. But the average American, when we talk about jobs and, you know, costs, and let's not even talk about food costs and things of that nature, are not better off.
Yeah. No. No, it's not even close. I don't understand why they're going with this.
Well, they'll twist something or other somewhere. They'll find some statistics that make sense.
Yeah, I guess. So what's going on in the market? We had, a down day today.
Yeah, we had a down day that was rescued at about 210. There was a really poor economic data point that was presented today. It was the ISM manufacturing number, which was sub 50 for the third straight month, which means that's contraction. Above 50 is expansion. Below 50 is contraction. And it was just the third month that it was below 50 and missed estimates. At the same time, the prices paid jumped up from 35 to about 60, which means that the prices paid for manufacturing ramped up considerably. And one of the things we're watching of late is that we've seen that while manufacturing has slowed a bit, prices paid have been dropping. And that's very good because, yeah, in consideration of the fact that they're not making as much, they are doing much better on margins, because the input costs are lower. But when you look at this now and you say, hey, wait a minute, now they're still slowing down, but their input prices are climbing, that's not a really good combination.
No.
So we saw this happen, and this is on the heels of contraction for China and Europe over the weekend. We saw some numbers and over Labor Day. They were all negative numbers. The markets in Europe dropped, in Asia dropped, and our market dropped about 0.75%. Until about 210. 210, the markets got a spark up there, took us, and all of a sudden, the markets went positive. I mean, they ramped up very fast. And the reason for that is, it's not clear, but the rumor is that maybe Mario Draghi released some of his plan that he's going to present on September 6th, and that there's bond buying involved, and everybody got all excited. But this is the kind of thing that I just can't see lasting, this kind of last-minute push on the futures and on ETFs where they're just ramping it up. And then, you know, from what happens there, it's a constant rescue. But after a while, that money runs out. And when you see that the continuation of negative economic data points and earnings misses and pre-announcements that are negative, that's going to weigh on things. And with the world slowing down as well, Australia's GDP came in less than expected tonight. I think that, you know, this whole hope trade that the Fed is going to come in and the ECB is going to step in and China is going to start loosening, all that is really something that's very I think it's a very thin argument for bidding up equities.
Yeah, I'd say it's also it seems like a wishful thinking at best. And why don't it, you know, if it's going to happen, let it happen and then profit afterwards.
Exactly. You know, but so, you know, the whole thing is it's called the Bernanke put, where he spoke at Jackson Hole last week on Friday and talked about how, you know, they will continue to do a low interest rate environment for an extended period of time. And there is further reason potential to have some kind of quantitative easing. And I can give you all the reasons we've talked about it, but additional quantitative easing doesn't make any sense to me at all. It's going to raise up maybe stock prices because there's excitement, there's more liquidity in the markets. It's going to raise up bond prices. You're going to see also commodity prices moving up already. Gold and silver have moved up dramatically over the last weeks. But then again, it also raises the price of oil. It raises the price of food. And how does that all help the employment situation? How does buying bonds by the government help employment? I can't figure it out.
I can't figure it out either. I have no idea.
It's further state that
I think the idea is, of course, to stabilize the market in such a way that people have the confidence to start a business.
It hasn't worked so far.
Because the money went into the bankers' pockets and they just kept it as bonuses.
They kept it as bonuses and the banks traded on it and it filled the holes that were made after their major implosion.
Yeah.
That was the big first. It had to fill the hole. You know, and then they can go out and do their thing. But the whole thing is, it stinks to high hell. How's that?
That's odd.
Now, talking about the markets, FedEx cut its guidance for the quarter rather substantially after the bell tonight. And oftentimes FedEx is used as a economic barometer.
Yeah, I would say that and UPS both.
So they cut their guidance rather substantially. Stock was down about 4% or so after that. Now, here's something that's interesting. I talked about this last week on my Disciplined Investor podcast. You know, one of the big things that's happening, and we're seeing a change in market sentiment, and you and I talked about this, is, you know, the idea that, well, things that maybe we used to use a lot, the technology has changed. So printers are not as used as often because of email and digital encrypted documents and all that, right? Well, if that's the case, can we then segue to the fact that if there is all this going on, the reason why FedEx cut its guidance, and a big reason was because of express mail, that the potential for express mail is not going to be used as it was before?
I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Well, in other words, if you have digitally encrypted documents that you could send to people, you know, if you have email, if you have other methods of communication that can replace a letter, let's say, or a document.
Yeah. Which has been going on for a while, actually.
Yeah, but now printer sales are tumbling. People don't use printers as much. Is it possible?
Well, is that really what it is? Because I'm looking at a printer, which is on, and I use it quite a bit. And then I have another printer behind me that's over there with a big, giant office printer. And then I have the monstrous Epson 4000, which is a professional, you know, wide carriage photo poster printer. I got printers. I don't need to buy more printers. I mean, is that a possibility too, that we're full of printers and we don't need any more printers? I mean, these printers last for a while.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that entirely because they've made them so.
Printers around right now where you're sitting. Is there a printer?
I'm embarrassed to say how many printers are here, and that are not being used.
Well, you're doing a podcast. You can't be using the printer. Make too much noise.
I have a big Epson too, the 13-inch wide one. I have another Epson, an HP, and a big HP. So I have four printers in this small office right here, two in the garage that are not being used. And in my office, I have a LaserJet that's not being used, a LaserJet we are using, two other inkjets, and one other printer. And then there's probably five older ones in the closet.
Yeah, so printers aren't being used. I mean, whether they're being used or not, they're not being. There's not a lot of sales going on because you don't need to buy more printers, it sounds like to me.
Also, I think on top of that, I'm just kind of saying that is it possible that we're sending less letters as well and sending less packages because of technology? And that's
I know the argument. My thinking is I think that ship has sailed years ago. And I don't think it's much different than it was 5 years ago. I mean, my mail, which in the heyday of the pre-revolution, when I was getting press releases in the mail before the internet in the 1980s, I mean, I'd have a mailbox full of stuff, full. And then by 1999, nothing. I mean, it was just, you know, I'd get some a few flyers and some mail, but hardly anything compared to what I was getting in 1989. And I don't think it's changed since then. I'm actually probably using the mail a little more than I was 10 years ago.
Interesting. I mean, it's like voicemail. Voicemail, you don't get as much anymore because somebody just sends you a message.
Yeah, they text you.
Yeah, text you, and if they get your voicemail, they'll hang up on it anyway, and then text you.
Yeah, well, it's more efficient.
It comes right to your hand, right where you are. So, but there was something else about it. I found an interesting stat about email, actually, that it is actually the 30th anniversary for email. Does that sound about right?
No, it doesn't sound right at all.
Well, that's the information I got. 30th anniversary of email. There are currently 3.375 billion email accounts worldwide and 145 billion email messages sent each day.
Yeah, they always have these stats. You go to email conferences and they throw these stats at you. 30 years ago would be what? 1982? Yeah. Well, there was email going on in the 70s. I was using email. I was using MCI mail in the late 70s, by the late 70s. And the ARPANET had email. That's bull crap. That's a number's wrong.
Wait a minute. You were using email in the 70s?
Yeah.
Who are you sending it to? Who had email back then?
A lot of people did. MCI mail was extremely popular, and I think CompuServe was underway, and everybody had a CompuServe account with their email system, which was a number, which you had a number they gave you. And I think that was in business in 79. And the Source was for sure, and they had an email system. And if you had an internet account or a pre-internet or even an internet account per se, you could use email. That was going on since the early 70s. Yeah.
I remember the CB being very popular in the early 70s.
10-4, good buddy.
Yeah. With 10-10 on the side. Anyway, so let's talk about Facebook for a second. Facebook gets a little lift after hours. Facebook hit a new low today because, well, listen to this. Guess who downgraded Facebook? This is unbelievable.
I don't know. Who?
Who would be the most shocking brokerage? I don't know about shocking, but who would be the most troubling brokerage to downgrade Facebook?
But the people who did their IPO?
Right. Morgan Stanley. Morgan Stanley downgraded
Facebook. Are they trying to get – they really want to be sued?
The story just gets crazier and crazier with Facebook. They downgraded them and lowered their price target from something like 38 to 32 or something like that.
How about still a price target of 7?
Yeah, well, but the big news was that Andreessen from Andreessen Horowitz is not going to be selling any shares more than what they're selling for tax purposes, and Zuckerberg is not going to sell any shares for at least 12 months. Why
is he selling any shares at all or saying anything like this? He should be holding on to this stuff for dear life.
The thing is, he could theoretically sell them, right? So everybody's worried about is this additional amount of shares coming on the market and selling shares and diluting them.
He doesn't want to lose control of the company by selling his stock.
And then on top of that, they did some kind of a deal where I think it was 100 million shares that were supposed to have a lockup expiration in the next several months are not going to have that expiration. So therefore, the float on the company is going to stay tighter than expected by about 4 or 5%. So the stock was up like 2% after hours, which just wiped out the day's losses. I don't know if this is a new trend or if it's just a pause in the downward movement. We own a little bit of Facebook. I bought it at about 22, about a very small amount. You know, and for about, 2 days, it looked great. Things were doing just fine. And then you started getting the downgrades, and this guy saying that mobile advertising is, not going to be realized, and then it just kind of just steamrolled the wrong way. But I think that with the small float and the amount of short sells right now, this could be an interesting, I don't know about right now at this time, at this price, but one of these days we're going to see a big short squeeze on this thing.
Okay.
Sweet. September is here.
Yeah, it's about time. Well, the days get shorter and it gets depressing.
Yeah, well, it's also one of the most volatile times and one of the most volatile months for the stock market. I think most people think October is, right? October's always been a time of really bad occurrences in
the
stock market?
Yeah, when they happen, but the cycle's so long that when they happen, it's you know, every 20 years or so.
So September is the most volatile month traditionally. And what also seems to be interesting is that whenever there's an announcement about something in a particular month, like the summer doldrums, August being a rough month usually in between this or that, or we seem to be bucking the trend. It seems like almost whatever the news may be on a positive note, we go the other way. And when there's a negative commentary about a particular situation in a cycle or in a seasonal type of manner, we go the opposite direction lately. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and of course, then you have the pundits that come out to explain this. There's always some missing piece of information that explains it away.
Exactly, because profits are up, and this is good, and there's that, and this and that. Anyway, so September is known to be, again, one of the most volatile. So the question is going to be, how do we play this out? What's going to happen with markets already around the world? You know, we've seen August was a questionable month. You know, not really great. U.S. markets did okay. Again, it was kind of the last week that helped things, but Asian markets did not do well. Shanghai is at a 2009 low, which is pretty impressive to track so much on the Shanghai index. So the question then is, if all this kind of negativity is out there and the volatility in the summer months and the August factors and now September, where's all the buying coming in that keeps on coming to the market? Have you noticed, if you look at a daily chart, there's kind of like this whoosh down and selling off on some bad news, and then all of a sudden it turns around and miraculously markets are flat or just off a small amount by the end of the day.
I've given up on trying to figure it out.
So you're smart. But I got to tell you, the only thing that makes any sense to me, besides maybe low liquidity and low volumes, although today was a higher volume day, is that there's a lot of money coming out of markets around the world. For example, China. And we know that the Chinese are really trying to pull money out of the Chinese markets and go into other places. Maybe it's possible that what's happening is that they're taking the money out, and by the end of the day, it's going into, you know, an ETF, or it's going into futures, it's going into stocks. And that's why the U.S. markets seem to rally towards the end of the day. There's a lot of excess money coming in from other places.
Well, there's not a lot of places you can put your money around the world that, you know, this has some potential to be safe, seems to me. You know, it's a good business.
Right. So, I mean, even though the U.S. market looks questionable from an earnings and fundamental standpoint and from an economic standpoint, maybe it's the old, you know, the best house on a horrible street.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
I had a client call me the other day, and he says, I got some excess money, and tell me, where can I put it that it's safe? That I can get a decent rate of return. I said, "What? You stumped me. I mean, if you want to put it somewhere safe, you're going to get, you know, 1% or sub 1% returns, you know, for a short period of time. Not tying it up in a bond, let's say, for 10 years, or not investing in a dividend company. I mean, just something, you know, that's kind of liquid and safe. There's nothing out there. I mean, what are CDs paying these days?
Are they paying?
No, it's lousy.
Yeah."
So, I mean, people are forced, as you say, that people are forced to put it into something maybe they don't want to just because they don't really have choices. We've almost taken off the table some of the, you know, regular choices that were out there for people. Bonds are at a relatively all-time high. You know, yields are low, but still, you know, where else do you go? Do you go to maybe municipals? It's still the same situation. Dividend yield on the S&P is pretty good, and you could do that. Some stocks are doing very well. REITs possibly, some real estate. But, you know, maybe some MLPs in the oil area. There's some opportunity there. But again, maybe utilities. But, you know, if you want safe without volatility, without potential variation of underlying principal value, it's a very, very thin selection.
Yeah. Well, that's the idea.
Now, what's your take on?
What?
Segue over to Israel for a second. What's your take on this whole Iran-Israel thing?
I don't have much of a take on it. I think it's a lot of saber rattling. I'm not sure what's going on. I know that the Israelis are, I don't know what the deal is. I get all kinds of weird reports, and a lot of it's contradictory. So I have no idea.
It's the old, you know, now they're starting with, hey, you know, if you hit me, I'm going to hit you. and the, you know, both sides.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of posturing. Oh, you're going to bomb me. Oh, we have bombs right ready to go. If you even see, if we see even a sniff of an aircraft over our, you know, our area. So it just seems like it's heating up and there's lack of support for this whole thing. Clearly before the election, this would be a real problem for Obama.
Yeah, might, maybe, could be. I think the economy collapsing in October would be a bigger problem.
Yeah. That,
but
do you speculate that's going to happen?
I thought about it for a while because, you know, all of a sudden all the, you know, the typical classic Peter Schiff is coming out of the woodwork and Rogers is coming out of the way. They're all coming out and they're talking about how everything's going to collapse after the first of the year because nobody seems to want to do anything about the financial cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt that, you know, we're, because I have this 40-year cycle thing, but the cycle itself is all is can always be off by, you know, 6 months. I mean, it's not like it's on October 26th, you know, the market's going to collapse. That's not the way it works. It's just a kind of a general, it's a fuzzy cycle, and which is a good one. As a fuzzy cycle, if the market or the economy collapsed in late 2008 instead of 2009 when it should have collapsed, even though it was caused by a housing bubble, but still it collapsed. You can't ignore the reality of it. It could be off a year. So it could be this October that we have an economic collapse just before the election. And that would lose Obama the election immediately and put the Republicans in.
We should probably look to see what's happening with Ingersoll Rand. To see how that name is popping up, right? Isn't that your theory?
No, International Rectifier.
Yeah, yeah.
Ingersoll Rand. Yeah, International Rectifier. It always crops up in the news just before a collapse. It's weird.
I have to keep a watch for that. Let's keep a watch for that. If all of a sudden, you know, we're hitting some amazing numbers or something's happening. But yeah, that is interesting that we're starting to see that. You know, what you have is, for on the major media, you have Jeremy Siegel, who's always bullish. He writes a book and everybody loves him. He's a Wharton guy. He's got this and that going. And they just love trotting him out, you know, because all he says is, yeah, stocks are going to be a lot higher. You know, and there's a 50-50 chance in 10 years from now that stocks will be higher. And I'm sitting there going, is that a prediction? What is that exactly?
What is that? It's just a roll of the dice.
But that's his belief, and you know he says, for example, one of the things he says is he missed the 2008 meltdown entirely. It was unexpected. The problem is with being uber bullish, you know, all the time, is that, or uber bearish all the time. Either way you want to look at it, is you can't see anything. You only see one thing, and it's the end of the game, and everything in between you can't see. So therefore, you can get smushed. And, you know, he just keeps on doing that. Peter Schiff constantly talking about the dollar just being disintegrated to zero.
Yeah, that hasn't happened.
I haven't seen that. I mean, yeah, it did go down a lot. You know, it was down over a period of time and it moved over. But he's talking about, like, your dollar will be worthless.
No, he was predicting essentially a German 1930 scenario where you're walking around wheelbarrows full of dollars, you know, and they shake a Zimbabwe $1 trillion bill at you.
And he prefers gold and silver.
Yeah, his gold bug.
Which happens to be what his company sells.
Well, what a coincidence.
How do you like that? How do you like that? You know, what came first, right? The sales idea or the pitch? Oh, boy. Syria. Syria's bad. You know, back in the whole Middle East thing, I mean, the government seems to be really pissed off. Just going around shooting and killing. I think, did you see what the number was, the total amount of deaths in the last however long?
I don't know. I find that these reports are questionable, so they don't have real reporters over there, and the ones that are over there, they are reporting different stuff. I have no idea what's going on there, really.
When you say they don't have real reporters, you're saying that...
Don't you listen to these news reports? It goes, oh, and as the rebels reported that they were shot at, and the rebels, and we can't verify this video, and we can't verify this, we can't verify the report. There's just it's just all rumors. It's like the rumor news. So I pay attention to it as much as I need to, but I don't take it like gospel by any means at what's coming out of there.
Different than anything else in the news.
Sorry?
that different than anything else in the news?
I think it's a lot different. This is really, really pathetic.
I see the same thing
happening.
If
they're having a press conference or there's something's going on and, or there's a riot taking place in Oakland, there'll be cameras all over the place and people will be filming it and there'll be news media there. There'll be KRON will be there and KCBS and all these companies will be there and they'll be, and it's all verified. These are all taken with a hand, you know, the guys with their cell phones, you know, running and it's, you don't know what it is. And there's already instance after instance of phony baloney photos that are pushed off as something that they're not. I mean, the whole thing is just very scammish.
Well, we know there is something. There's definitely unrest there. We know.
There's a lot of shooting, and people are dying. There's no doubt about it.
It just looks like a real problem, and then you know the countries that are involved and not involved, and all the things that are going on. It just looks like a real disaster overall, and you know this is like the last holdout of a regime in the Middle East that just can't get knocked down, and they seem to be almost. It seems to be, you know, emboldened.
Yeah, well, if you don't want to count Bahrain, that is, where they're actually having the same situation, but it's not being reported at all.
It's not being reported, then it's not happening.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at Darfur and all these places and that whole situation in Africa where there's just, you know, all those gangs and killings and all that. I mean, I guess the media just gravitates to what they feel they could talk about,
or you know, what they're told to talk about. That's the way we would approach it. So let's see what else is on the list. Since I'm obviously not too interested in talking about Syria. Corn prices.
Surging. Corn prices surging. Soybeans hit a record today.
A record.
Seems that soybeans, it seems to be there's plenty of crop, but because of the whole movement of the other, you know, wheats and corns and all that, soybeans just kind of is getting swept along and is feeding upon itself, no pun intended. But, you know, soybeans and soy is used in a lot of products.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, I would almost ask you to pick up anything in your house in your refrigerator and tell me if it has.
Yeah.
If it.
I found cans of tuna that have soy in it.
It's amazing, I guess, filler, right?
Yeah, it's filler. And they apparently have a good public relations arm that convinces people to put it in everything. I refuse to eat much soy. I'm not going to just be eating soy.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah, you do. You can buy good Italian tuna, and those, you know, that you could get from that's imported. It's a little more expensive, like three times as much, but it's still tuna. It's not that expensive. There's a lot of choices. You don't have to be eating all this crap in a can.
Pretty much fresh food is the difference. You know, fresh food is not going to have it in it unless you buy soybeans. But I guess, was it tofu? But fresh food, which is not part of the American way of life, it seems.
No.
Where you buy something fresh and you actually cook it.
But when you're living in places like Florida, like you, or California, like me, which are breadbaskets for agriculture, there's a lot of fresh food available, and you don't have to deal with this other stuff. If you live in some place like Connecticut, I mean, yeah, they have a summer season, and they do have some fresh tomatoes once in a while. But for the most of the year, it's nothing. You can't get anything.
The worst fruit down here that I've ever encountered. You go to the store. You go to a Publix, for example. Unless you go to a
– In Florida?
Yeah, terrible.
Terrible?
You get tomatoes that are green and nasty. If you want to spend twice as much, you can get the vine ripes. Like, somehow it's so much more expensive to get a vine ripe. Let the tree do the riping, then pick it early. So it's got to be double the price. Oranges, can you believe that sometime we get California oranges here?
It's inexcusable. What's wrong with you people?
It's ridiculous. You can't get, I mean, okay, apples. I mean, how bad can they mess up on apples? But you can't get a plum to save your life that tastes anything. The peaches are hard as rocks.
God. Well, I thought you guys had good fruits and vegetables down there.
You go to a specialty store and pay up, you'll get good fruit. Stuff that is ripe, that's good. You know, you can buy a melon that's decent. But if you go to like a Publix, which is basically at every corner, the fruit is – I ask the guys all the time, where do you get this stuff? I don't understand how you actually sell this kind of crap. You can't get decent fruit at all. You know, and a lot of times you get the stuff that's been pre-done. You know those little baby carrots have been already peeled?
Oh, yeah, and then bagged.
You ever taste those things? They taste like soap.
Yeah, they do. They got some sort of coating on them.
And then now the big thing is that they give you pre-chopped vegetables. So there's a whole selection of chopped onions, chopped tomatoes, chopped celery, chopped carrots, all this whole selection of chopped vegetables, because I guess people are unable to take out a knife or some kind of a instrument to cut it and peel it.
Too much work,
I suppose.
So is Publix publicly traded?
I've privately traded one of the most successful and most profitable companies out there on a private basis. Stock actually, for a number of years, went up by about 25% a year.
Wow.
There were –
And they did a buyback or what happened?
They were always privately held, but the privately held stock appreciated in value every year.
Okay, right.
There was I have public ex-employees, managers as clients. I was shocked when I met – I don't know why, but maybe this is just wrong-headed of me. But the first time I met somebody from Publix that was a manager and he put down his portfolio, I almost fell out of my chair. I didn't expect to have, you know, $2.5 million from a Publix manager.
He's just a store manager?
Based on Publix stock.
Oh, okay.
So – and the thing about that is they hate to part with it. I can't blame them. I'm doing so well.
Yeah, I'll tell them to get lost.
Bankruptcy judge rules that American Airlines can terminate the pilots' labor contracts.
They're in bankruptcy.
Well, they weren't allowed to until this ruling.
It seems to me that they should be able to. I mean, you're in bankruptcy.
Sense, but you know how it goes in business, especially when it comes to unions. Now, by the way, let me tell you a story about this. I was recently in the Philippines. You know that. And I traveled over on ANA, All Nippon Air.
Yeah.
And I sat had an unbelievably pleasant experience on the ride over.
It's a very good airline.
Very nice. The flight attendants are just marvelous. The selection of food and wines, amazing. Cold sake selection was fantastic.
I'll bet.
Took advantage of. And really, it was great. Nothing, you know, lots of room and, you know, beds that lay down and, you know, I mean, chairs that lay down to a bed and all that. Great. I fall asleep. They put a blanket on me. You know, I mean, it's just a lovely experience. On the way back, now let me tell you this quick story. On the way back, I'm flying from Manila to Bangkok, Bangkok, Frankfurt to Miami. Okay. Well, I was going to take Lufthansa from Frankfurt. But I find out the day before there's a major strike with Lufthansa. Almost every flight is canceled out of Frankfurt. And I said, that's not going to work. So my wife quickly goes in, changes all my flights. Now I'm flying from Manila to Guam, which is a place I've always wanted to go.
Wanted to go to Guam.
Yeah, Guam.
What about it?
How cool is
it? It's Guam. Yeah, you're there.
I landed in Guam. A few things. Now, I must tell you something.
Who goes to Guam?
There was a place in between my stop.
How long were you in Guam?
2 hours, which is pretty much all I need to be there for.
Yeah, sure.
It's been lengthy, actually. But Guam has an unbelievable set of security protocols. When I go to Guam, I had a...
What are they worried about?
I'll tell you something. They're serious over there. They're very serious. So I land over there, and usually your bags would go on the plane and follow you around and all that stuff, right? Well, they said, sir, we found a lighter in your bag. I said, in my bag? Yes, in your checked baggage. I said, yeah, I've traveled all over the world with that lighter. What's the problem? No lighters are allowed to be in any baggage on a plane out of Guam. I said, really? They confiscated it. They went in my bag and took it in my checked bag. Then I go to get on the plane, and there's a line. Every person that has a carry-on, the entire carry-on is pretty much all the stuff that's in your carry-on is taken out of the carry-on. And they look through everything. And they put it back. And then you have to take your shoes off, and they take a very thorough investigation of your shoes. And then you have to go through the scanner and all that, then you can leave. Which is unbelievable, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Is this normal? Because I felt a little bit uneasy. Is this the normal protocol? Oh, this is what we do every single time. So I guess there's a terrorist situation or there's
nothing. This is bogus.
You know, people are, I don't know, maybe they're, so we went to Guam.
Why don't they go find the guy and throw him in jail? I mean, come on.
That was pretty rough. So then I went from Guam to Hawaii. Hawaii to Chicago, Chicago, Fort Lauderdale.
That sucks.
It happened to have been a better total flight time than the other.
Than the routing route at Lufthansa.
Now, but let me tell you the upshot of this. The difference between the first leg, the first part of my flights with ANA and all that, and the return trip, I was on United.
Oh.
Boy, did that suck. That was horrible. It was supposedly the same class. I had a 777-300.
Nice plane.
But on the way there, I sat in unbelievably comfortable seats and that were full laydowns and a menu that was 9 pages long. Plus personal TVs. I had a full AC where I could plug in my laptop and all that, you know. On the way back, they have those PowerPort things. It doesn't even charge your laptop. It just keeps it at a constant if you had a PowerPort with you. The seats don't lay down. There's no leg rest for your legs. The menu is about 3 pages, which the first page is the hello and welcome. The last page is something crappy, and then they serve you like burritos and sausage and cheese sandwiches. Okay.
That's what I'm always looking for is a flight full of people eating burritos. It's like asking for trouble.
The selection of booze was horrible. Okay, they didn't have Johnny Black. It was amazing the differential, and I was just so aggravated. I gotta tell you something. There's always something that when you do this, something's gonna get me. And I said to the flight attendant, I said, "Can I have a toothbrush? Because they didn't give me that nice bag full of junk, right? The socks and the earplugs and the toothbrush and the facial thing and the
they didn't give you a bag?
On the way there, they even had something. They said, "Sir," I said, "What's this?" They said, "Oh, you put that on your neck or your back. It'll little stickers that relieve the pain and all that." I said, "Okay, that's cool." On the way back, there was no bag. There was no eye shades. There was no socks. There was none of that. So I said, "Can I?"
But you
get a toothbrush?
Coach, low-end coach? What were you flying in?
It was all the way in the front of the plane. All the way in the front.
You were in first class? You're kidding. This is not. This is a.
Not only that, the first class on this plane was 222. So there's 6 across in first class, or in their business first class, whatever they call it.
It must be the business class. Business first class. Yeah, it's business. Because real first class, there's not like that.
Yeah, I flew first class on the way over, and same itinerary was supposed to be first class on the way back. Huh. And they said, "I'm sorry, we don't have toothbrushes." I said, "Do you expect people to fly for 7 or 8 hours eating burritos with no toothbrush?" I said, "I don't understand. I can't believe you don't have toothbrushes." "No, I'm sorry. This is not the..." So she comes over like 20 minutes later. She says, "One of the flight attendants had an extra one of these. It's like one of those prepackaged toothbrushes."
Yeah, with a little piece of toothpaste.
I said, "Okay, thank you very much." Now I get to Chicago. And for whatever reason, that leg from Chicago to Fort Lauderdale, they had me in coach. And I can fly. That's not a problem, but that wasn't my ticket. So I said, "I got to tell you something. This has been a miserable experience." And I went down all the reasons that why I don't fly U.S.-based airlines when I go international, because it's just a horrible experience every time. And they said, we know. And I said, "You know, what's the difference?" I said, "What is the cause? What is the problem?" And we went on, and they agree with me and all that. Well, I was in standby on the bottom of the list to get to first class. There's only 8 seats in first class or in business class, whatever it was, right?
Miraculously, yeah, you were probably in a 757.
Miraculously, after all the squeakiness, guess who gets the ticket? They gave me the first class ticket.
Oh, good.
So, but I got to tell you something. The service differential, and you know, whereas on ANA they're just polite, sweet, and helping. United are like, "What can I get you? What do you need? Please don't keep on dinging the light." You know, that's how. Not to mention that my seat was broken on the long leg flight.
It just kept on
its own. I said, "Can I switch seats or something?" They said, "I'm sorry, we have an extra pilot on. He's going to be taking that seat." I said, "But I can't like put it up for landing and stuff like that. It just keeps on going back. And what if I want to sit up and read or use my computer, you know, in this small space?" "Nope. Sorry." So anyway, boo United. Boo.
Yeah, it's really a disappointment that these carriers have gone so far downhill. I mean, American, which is bankruptcy, started first. I mean, I remember flying in a first class ticket once from Dallas-Fort Worth to San Francisco on American, and there was they fed us nothing, not even peanuts. Yeah, so you guys have, is there a snack or something? I asked. No, not on this flight.
That sounds bad. Spirit, where you have to bring your own chair. But American Airlines, listen, they're going to get their now there's another problem. American Airlines and United are going to be in court to decide on their level of negligence in the September 11th attacks. There's a lawsuit that was brought in 2008 or so. Hmm. Now there's going to be they're going to have to, on top of all this, now they have to be in court.
Well, the only good carrier in the United States that I've found to be consistent is Southwest. But, you know, essentially a bus.
Yeah. Anyway, so off with the airlines and on with the big event, September 12th. Apple is going to be introducing, it seems, its iPhone 5. Did you get an invitation?
No, they don't invite me to anything anymore. I'm an enemy of the company or something. They are very picky about, unless you're going to jump up and down and clap and yell yay, they don't want you.
That's not your style.
No, not really. I mean, when I'm watching a football game, maybe.
You'd ask questions, and they probably, things that would be too, not that they want to reveal. You'd ask questions, and you'd, kind of pick on some of the points. Why did you do this? Why did you do that? Versus just totally, just bowing over and, drinking the Kool-Aid, right?
Well, there's that.
Yeah, don't want that. It's not good for the product. So you think they're going to come out with an iPhone 5? What's going to be the big hoo-ha?
No, I think it's just going to – well, they're setting it up now. If you look around the news media, you see nothing but, phone stories everywhere. I wrote about this in today's PC Magazine, saying that this is all just a prelude to the – they want to get the line to go around the block again. This will be their one of their last shots at it. So they're so they're pushing and pushing and pushing, and so they're, everything is about the leaked photos and all this sort of thing. And they're going to get a line around the block again, and there's going to be a bunch of news coverage about the line that goes around the block, and people are going to go, "Ooh, why are you standing in line? Oh, I want to get one of the first phones." And they don't want to do what they did last time, which was people didn't get in line, and then they walked up and, an hour later after the line dissipated around 1 in the afternoon, and just walked in and bought a phone. They don't want that this time. So there's all these reports of shortages. Oh, there's shortages. We're not going to have enough phones. So the whole thing's just rigged media crap.
I can see that. By the way, when I was in the Philippines, I mentioned your name to some of the tech people that I was with. They are readers of yours. They know you.
Ah, good. I'm glad I have a couple left.
A few left. Let's see. I got a couple other things here.
But they're readers, but they don't listen to DH Unplugged?
Oh, no. Of course they do. Oh, no. We have a big follow.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Not a lot of iPhones in the Philippines. A lot of the Android phones, but a lot more of the old Nokias. And they're still, you just watch people with the texting.
Yeah, on the keyboard. I'm not on a full keyboard, but on just a number board, the numerical keyboard.
Man, it looks brutal.
It does. My daughter has one of those and she likes it.
Oh, really? She still uses that?
Yeah, she uses it for texting. And she's got, she knows how to hit this 3 times, 4 times, you click away. And as far as she's kind of retro. She thinks the smartphones are dumb. She doesn't want one.
Oh. Anyway. Well, that's progressive. we asked last week for people to share with us the ways that they use or don't use the show. Remember that?
Yes, I do remember.
The comments. Blowing in. Take a look at this. I put a link there.
Yeah, I saw that. I was looking at him while you were talking.
Lots of good comments, I thought.
Yeah, I think they're reasonable.
And they like you, which is nice.
Well, that's better than not liking me.
We don't have any of those crappy things like I'm number one to comment. I think some very good feedback, so thank you. If you want to check that out, go to the episode number 160, and we're still accepting. Please keep on coming with the comments of how you use the show, what is good, what is bad. And this very helpful. I think it's very helpful. This one gentleman says that he would love even for us to have ads from Ford or Carbonite, Audible. As long as the funny accents stay away. Who does the funny accents, me or you?
I don't do it. Leo Laporte is the one who does funny accents. Show's mixed up. I mean, I do a couple of voices, but, I'm not really the accent meister.
Yeah, I'm not good at accents. I can barely do my own voice. All right, listen, there's an article I thought was very interesting. That was from, I think, MarketWatch today. You see that towards the bottom there. It's talking. It's very bearish. It says, here's three stocks or four stocks that are, you know, being hit by the short sellers. You know, the short sellers really are betting big on.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at that at first, I think when someone would read that, they'd be, whoa, this is a stock that's going to go down. You know, this is a negative article, a negative commentary.
Right.
But I actually think that is a little bit to the contrary. I think
I'm totally agreeing with you. I think Radio Shack is a buy. I think JCPenney's a buy. I don't know anything about Sturm Ruger. What are they?
A lot, actually.
Oh, they're the gun company that makes the Ruger hand pistol. I'd buy them. Green Mountain is your favorite.
I can't talk about them because they're just whatever they are. But the short interest is enormous. Here's what happens. When you see any good news on a stock that has enormous short interest, what happens is a chain reaction where the shorts cover, driving the price up. Buyers come in and buy it. The shorts get even more screwed, so they buy it further. And oftentimes, short sellers that want to cover will cover at any price, different than a buyer buying it at a target price.
Yeah. No, I think I think these picks are disastrous, except for Green Mountain, but that's a timing problem.
And they were up 29% a couple of weeks ago because they came out with better earnings. Or at least the earnings that weren't as much of a disappointment.
Yeah, well, so these opinion columns, you never know what to...
Well, especially with MarketWatch these days, they kind of went to blog style. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's some. They have a lot. This company's making lots of money. And so they have a lot of inventory to create.
Right. No matter what the level of quality.
Yeah.
Some of the players like that, right, that are professionals like you and a variety of others, but some of these you just get people that, who are they? You know, they're not journalists. They're not even, I would say, high-end money managers or, you know, well-known.
I don't know, Matt, so I don't know. Maybe he just I have no idea what he's up to here.
Just so. a good headline grabber.
It is a good headline grabber. I'm sure he's got more page views than I did with my last thing. I can't even remember what it was. But anyway, so, all right, well, we'll notice that. So let's take a look at our stocks. We're running out of time here.
Let me pull here. And, of course, you can go over to DH Unplugged in any episode and just pull up the spreadsheet. And we do this just as a fun game, if you will, to look at what stocks could be moving. And John and I do this, again, not for recommendation to buy or sell any security. If you do anything, realize that it is a very it could be very aggressive to buy a security. You could lose all your money. You could make a lot of money. Seek professional financial counseling before you do so. John, myself, or clients may own any of the positions mentioned. So, going down the list, Icon still holding up nicely. Hewlett Packard, $16.99, pathetic. Just keeps on getting more pathetic. Cracker Barrel,
amazing.
Wow. Your Cracker Barrel is just doing very well, up 10%. Opka, kind of hanging in there. It'll come back one of these days. Dell was down again today, most of the day, pretty hard, and then kind of popped back at the end. TransDigm is doing great, up 7. Where's that TransDigm? Up 9.5%. Westport Innovations got stopped out, up 7.5% on the stop. Chipotle is down 3%. Buffalo Wild Wings almost getting ready to be stopped out, which is just shocking to me. Lake Mason short is flat. Sanderson Farms, the poultry's up 17.6%. And the most recent picks, Potash, the short up 5%. Natural gas short up 0.6. And the Vietnam Fund up 2.62% since buying.
Well, that's better than poking an eye with a sharp stick. So you got nothing for – you got Z.
Z, that's not like Zed. That's actually, we're going short Zillow.
Oh, really?
Zillow. Zillow is starting to show.
I like Zillow.
I mean, it's not a bad company. Nothing wrong with it. But if you look at the chart, it's showing some strain there, and we hear some market peeps around that there could be something coming up in the near future that could be negative on the stock, and you know. But that's just rumor and anecdote. But, you know, if you look at the stock, it is kind of vulnerable at this point. And if we don't see – it had a nice run. And if we don't see any kind of decent amount of momentum in the housing space, this could be a real problem.
Hmm.
mentioned there's some competition around, so we'll be short Zillow. And that's all I got.
Well, I'm following closely. I'm following Apple.
Yes.
Waiting for the
should be a sell the news peak event.
I think it's could probably. I think on the next show I'm going to short it again. And I lost the first time, but this time I'm in a better position.
Yes, of course, it's higher. If you love to short it at 500, you'd love it at 700.
You'd love it short at 700, which is about where it's going to be.
So it's going to be the day after. So it may be the right time next show.
Maybe I should do it now.
Well, no, you could. Well, you could. It's going to be up to the news point. And then you'll be the sell the news after.
I want to sell it the day before I should sell it today. I won't. What difference does it make if I lose out if the thing starts collapsing right away? It might not. It might actually go up. Although recently, historically, when Apple did a big rollout, the stock would go up for about a week after the press conference. More recently, it goes down.
For a day, 2 days. Mm-hmm. Question is, what's going to be? And here's the good news. It's not real money.
Yeah, I know. That's the good news. So now I'm looking at a possible buy. Because I was looking at the short, you know, me and these, I look at who's, you know, the insiders. So I'm looking at this guy who is a director at Regis Corporation, which is a personal services company, who has been buying into the company like in increasing amounts until, I guess it's not increasing amounts. He started with never mind, I'm not going to buy this now. I have this backwards.
Okay. That was good information.
Sorry. But he's, no.
All right, so we'll scratch that.
Scratch it, never mind. It's RGS, but I'll take another look at it later.
You look at next week?
At what? Apple? I would like to have sold Publix, but apparently that would have been the stupidest thing in the world. And what am I thinking anyway, that the American public is going to demand quality? So that's not going to happen.
Sense that they're making money because they give you crap produce.
Yeah, they're probably a high profit margin. I'm out. I got nothing. I got nothing for this week.
Talk next week, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of things. We have Mario Draghi. We have the employment situation happening this week. At the end of the week, we have the unemployment numbers coming out. We're currently at 8.3%. We'll see where it goes. There's some talk, very strange talk that I got today in an article about this weekend, Greece is going to be out of the euro.
I doubt it.
Too. But we do have the talk. And then on the 12th, along with Apple's Day, we have the German High Court ruling on the constitutionality of the ESM being used to buy back bonds and do what they do. Mm. In other words, Germany could squash the whole ESM if they vote against it, saying it's unconstitutional for them to put money in the ESM, which is basically funding the whole operation of the entire European region right now.
Well, this will be very entertaining. When is this? Well, I lost you there. You disappeared.
The 12th.
Oh, the 12th. Okay. All right. So we get that to talk about. All right. Good. Well, we'll talk next Tuesday then.
As they say in the Philippines, goodbye.
Goodbye to you.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.